Is the Juan Soto sweepstakes already over before it begins? We're down to how many teams now? Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome into First Pitch, your one stop for daily MLB recap, news, notes, everything under the sun when we're talking about Major League Baseball. I'm Christian Rau. You can find me on Twitter at Christian S. Rau. Joining me today is Troy Brock. You can find Troy on Twitter at Troy B. Baseball. We got a lot to talk about, Troy. It's going to be an eventful episode. Lindsey's off this Wednesday, but while we are holding it down for him, we're going to talk about a two-horse race potentially for the Juan Soto sweepstakes already. People are talking it could be a 15-team race. We got a report that it might only be down to two. We're going to break that down and talk about why we think that's complete and utter bull. Oh, look at that. I put it in a little, my own bluffer myself. And then we're going to talk about some certain big stars that are ready for opening day. And then a certain manager is no longer a manager, but heading down south. Lots of things to talk about. And then obviously we'll end off with quick pitch with what we're hearing across the league with free agency. But Troy, I think the biggest things we got to start off with right off the bat is Juan Soto. Juan Soto's obviously the biggest name in free agency coming out this season. New York Yankees last year after being traded. This will be his presumably fourth team that he's been with if he decides to go somewhere else. But a new report came out on MLB stating that it's already a two-horse race between the New York Mets and the New York Yankees. I don't know if that's the right case. I don't know if you can even make that assumption right now, because we're talking about Juan Soto in a potential $700 million deal. Do you think that the Yankees and the Mets are the only two teams that are interested in the services of Juan Soto?
I absolutely do not think that those two teams are the only two that are interested in the services of Juan Soto. Juan Soto is most likely the best all-around batter in baseball as it stands right now, and he is on pace to make a deal pretty close to, if not right at, what Shohei Ohtani got as far as the total value of the contract. The AAV is probably going to be a little different. I don't think Juan Soto is going to defer 80% of his contract until after he retires like Shohei did. Agreed. But it's more than just a two-horse race. The Dodgers have shown that they are willing to spend money, and Shohei Ohtani has helped them in that case by deferring a lot of his deal, as well as another report that Clayton Kershaw is working on a new deal with them where he is also going to be deferring a lot of money, and that the Shohei deal changed the entire vibe in that clubhouse and the way that the players look at their own contracts and how they see the team going forward. But in my opinion, calling this a two-horse race between the Yankees and the Mets, the Yankees said earlier this year that they are cutting payroll. And of course, that could just be coach speak or whatever you want to call it. It might not be the actual truth. But if that is in case the fact, signing Juan Soto is the exact opposite of cutting payroll. That is adding a lot of payroll. And in my opinion, as I've said before, and I will say it again, Juan Soto, when all is said and done and the ink is dried and he finds a new team as his home, it is going to be in red pinstripes down in Philadelphia with none other than the Philadelphia Phillies.
Well, Dave Dombrowski does certainly make a lot of big moves during the offseason. He did not have a good trade deadline, so I think that he is looking to make a big splash. So Philadelphia could be a really, you know, an actual landing spot for Juan Soto that makes sense. I'm going to go ahead and push back just a little bit. I do think the Dodgers thing's absolutely crazy, by the way. Could you imagine Juan Soto going to the Dodgers with that roster? And right. Although that he would not take the deferrals like Ohtani did, if they could find a way to make that work, that wouldn't be fair. That would not be fair whatsoever. But I think wherever Juan Soto goes, it's not going to be fair, because every single one of those teams are going to be a contender. When you look at Juan Soto, though, and you look at how he was this season in New York, on a Yankees perspective, when they say that they're going to cut payroll, and I know the kind of the reports that you're referring to, it's the New York Yankees we're talking about here. It could just be the fact that they're trying to get under a certain CBT threshold for just a certain amount of time. The fact that they declined the option for Anthony Rizzo could have completed that checkbox saying that we're going to cut payroll just for for a certain amount of time before they go ahead and sign Juan Soto. So I'm not going to hold my breath too much or count my eggs before they hatch on that one. And then, of course, you got the New York Mets, where Steve Cohen has not been afraid to spend. We have seen the complete opposite when it comes to that. Steve Cohen will probably build a bridge and name it after Juan Soto if they go ahead and bring him to Queens. I would not be shocked to see it, to see both those teams be in the race and continue to be in the race until the end if they are not successful. But I think it's a little bit too early and way premature to say that, you know, we're only 3 days into free agency and to say that it's only a two horse race. We've already talked about two other teams with the Phillies, with the Dodgers, and I'm going to go ahead and throw out the San Francisco Giants. They will not be denied this season, this offseason, about being in the race for a big free agent. Look at all the ones that they've missed out on over the past three seasons, Troy. Bryce Harper, Arson Judge, Aaron Judge, Carlos Correa. Now, I think they're going to go after Juan Soto instead of John Soto, but they're going to make sure that they are at least in that race. I don't know if they go ahead and win him. If they do, that'd be absolutely insane. They haven't had a 30 home run guy for the Giants since 2004, Barry Bonds.
Wow.
Wild to think about that. Now, we're going to talk about the Giants a little bit more later on when we get the quick pitch, but Juan Soto could be an option, or at least it could be a guy that goes ahead and is a potential contender for the Giants. I do think they're going to be in the race, especially with the new front office they have in San Francisco. They can't have the same narrative that they've had this past through off seasons with this new regime, in my mind. So I think right there, we've already at five teams. And I think all five of those teams will be in contention. I think you're going to have a few other ones pop up. The Washington Nationals might get in the race to try and bring him back to their organization. Now that the ownership has been kind of a little bit in, you know, trying to figure it out themselves. They're no longer selling the team. The learner's son has taken over. You could try to bring him back. That would be a potential. Could you imagine him going to the Nationals with all that young core coming up? There would be definitely a logjam in the outfield. You'd probably have to make some trades moving on from some of those prospects. But I think you go ahead and you do that if you have the chance to bring in a guy like Juan Soto, without question. But I do like your Philadelphia Phillies piece. And I think the Phillies, and it pains me to say this, I think the Phillies would be a good fit for Juan Soto when you look at how the rest of the roster is constructed. And immediately the two might come to mind is the reunion between Bryce Harper and Juan Soto would be pretty, pretty sweet.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And Trey Turner and Juan Soto, you'd have three of the Washington Nationals just on the same team again, but it works out fantastically because the Phillies need a left fielder. And no, Juan Soto is not the best defensively, but you can stick him out there and he can be a warm body. He makes up for that more than anyone else in the sport. He makes up for his bad defense at the plate with what he can do getting on base and fitting at the top of that lineup. It would just add so much more depth to the Phillies lineup. They'd be able to move Kyle Schwarber down to the four hole with Juan Soto leading off, put Bryce Harper in the two hole, and just have just an immense amount of depth in their lineup, more so than they've already had. And it's crazy to think about how good the Philadelphia Phillies would be with Juan Soto added to the mix compared to how good they already are. And it's just, they would be one of, if not the scariest teams in baseball, right up there with the Los Angeles Dodgers lineup.
Yeah. And obviously they had a disappointing way to end their season this past year. They win their division, they get the bye for the first time, and then they slump really hard in the postseason and they fall to the New York Mets. And that's huge. Now, you lost New York Mets in the postseason. Are you going to let New York Mets win in the offseason? And that would be the Juan Soto sweepstakes in my mind here. So I wonder how aggressive Dave Dombrowski is going to be this offseason if it means going to get Juan Soto at all means necessary. They have one of the best owners in baseball. He's not afraid to spend money. We've seen that in the past. And this is a true test for any organization. I think every organization could go ahead and sign Juan Soto if they wanted to. Don't let them fool you and say that, you know, they can't do that. Even the Sacramento / Oakland / Mars on the Moon Athletics could go ahead and sign Juan Soto if they wanted to. They're just not going to. Every single organization has the funds, has the means to spend that type of money. It's up to those organizations to decide if it's worth it and decide if they want to make that next step to being true contenders for the next at least 5-6 years. Because if you have Juan Soto on your team and for the next 5-6 years while he's still in his prime, you are going to be a contender no matter what. We've even seen that with the Angels. All seasons long for the last decade, we've been able to say that the Angels are at least going to be potentially a playoff team because they have Mike Trout. Now, it hasn't worked out because of injuries and things like that, but so be it. But at the beginning of every season, we have talked about there's a good chance that team can make the postseason because they have one guy, and that's Mike Trout. It's going to be the same type of conversation if Juan Soto goes to whatever squad it is. You bring him to a guy like Philadelphia where he doesn't have to be the number one guy. That's how it kind of was with New York as well, with the Yankees. He didn't have to be the number one guy. You had Aaron Judge. If he went to the Dodgers, he wouldn't have to be the number one guy. If he goes to the Mets, he will have to be the number one guy. So that's something that comes into play when I think about it as well. But that's not going to change Steve Cohen's mind whatsoever. I think that we're in a 5-6 team horse race. I think there's a couple horses that were left out of the Derby in that article that came out on MLB.com. It's way too early to make that type of decision, to think it's just between the two New York teams. He could definitely go somewhere else. We're obviously going to talk a lot about Juan Soto this offseason until he signs. And when he does sign, we're going to talk about why it's a good fit or bad fit. We have plenty to talk about with Juan Soto all season long, Troy. Anything else to say on this guy before we move on?
He's the best. He's scary. He gets on base more than anybody. And just having him at the top of any lineup, that's a boon for any organization.
I will say this. You brought up Schwarber possibly moving out of leadoff spot. I don't know if you could do that. The way that he's so successful at leadoff, I don't know if you can take him out of the leadoff spot. I think you have to move Soto and keep him in like two or three or whatever. The way that you've had Schwarber, what he's done in the leadoff spot over his career over the last couple seasons, I find it hard for them to think that you'd be able to move him out of that spot, even if you did bring in a guy like Soto.
Having to make that decision is a great place to be in for the Philadelphia Phillies, because both of those guys are two of the best in the sport at taking walks. Kyle Schwarber,
that's true,
perennially is up there in top five in baseball in walks, and so is Juan Soto. So that's a good problem to have.
Let's hypothetical here. Schwarber 1, Soto 2, Harper 3. Harper would break the MLB record for RBIs probably if that was the case.
Oh, yeah. 160 plus easily.
Let's go in and talk about a couple of stars that were reportedly that might not be ready for opening day. There's some new news that just popped out at the beginning of this week. Let's start off with the World Series champions and arguably the best player in the National League right now, and that's Shohei Ohtani. After having a 50-50 season, he injured himself in the World Series. Shohei Ohtani underwent a surgery with a torn labrum tear. That resulted in a left shoulder dislocation. He went and got the surgery. It says that he's expected to be ready for spring training. He obviously did not miss a single game in the World Series. Now, it says his non-throwing arm for the record, so it shouldn't slow him down for maybe returning to the mound that he was building up towards the second half of the season. We're probably going to see two-way Shohei once again in 2025. But does this concern you at all? This is the first, really major injury that we're seeing from Shohei Ohtani that could impact him as a whole, right? That could impact him to being batting and throwing, obviously just being on the field. He obviously had the Tommy John surgery last year. Well, I don't know. Was it Tommy John? He had an injury last year that didn't allow him to pitch. So excuse me, I don't really know exactly the injury. With that being said, now we're at the point in time where we could be talking about him missing time because of the shoulder dislocation. He never missed any time in the World Series, so I don't know if that's going to be the case. They do think he's going to be ready for spring training, but do you have any concerns whatsoever about the longevity of Shohei Ohtani because of this injury, Troy?
As far as the longevity goes, I don't have any concerns with this injury. Even though the reports are he'll be ready for spring training, I think that might be rushing him back a little quickly. I told Lindsay a couple weeks ago that I don't think that he should have been playing in those games in the World Series after he injured the shoulder, especially with the way he was reacting, running while holding the top of his jersey to make sure he doesn't move the arm. He was obviously in a lot of pain, and he underwent the surgery to get it fixed, but I think that it's going to, if it doesn't push back his ability to hit and take at bats, I think it will most certainly push back his pitching timeline. I still think he will pitch in 2025 again, but I think that this, even with it not being his throwing arm, I think that it's still his arm that he catches with, and so it's going to affect him in some ways, and I think that it will push back his timeline for pitching at least a couple of weeks, maybe even a month or two.
Just a little bit of cleanup on my side here. That was a Tommy John surgery that he was recovering from. Just want to make sure I had that right, but so I wasn't giving you guys bad information. It's actually his second Tommy John surgery that he's recovering from.
Wow.
Pretty interesting. But again, the injury right now is on his non-throwing shoulder, but it does obviously throw some sort of impact on him being able to pitch. You have to use your entire body to do so. My biggest concern is, will he be ready to step in the batter's box as well? We saw that he didn't have the best postseason, especially with runners empty, with no runners on base. He did have some moments, but obviously when he returned to the World Series after the shoulder injury, he wasn't, you know, 100%, as you mentioned as well. He didn't have to be, because that entire team around him was outstanding. So that was something that really didn't become quite a storyline, because he didn't have to be the Shohei Ohtani of the regular season for the Dodgers as they won the World Series in Game 5. I'm a little bit, you know, cautiously optimistic, the thinking that he's going to be just fine and this will just be one little thing on, you know, just on his legacy, that he got hurt in the World Series but they still won it anyways. With that being said, though, I think you do have to keep it in mind that 162 is a very long season, and if you're going to be pitching and batting, we might see a guy like Ohtani take a couple extra days off in 2025 from both. We might see full rest days from him, something we really haven't seen in the past, especially this past season from him. On the other side, with the Atlanta Braves, we've seen at the GM meetings, the GM meetings are going on in San Antonio. We're going to get more into them when we get the quick pitch. But Alex Anthopoulos went out and stated that both Ronald Acuna Jr. and Spencer Strider will not be ready for opening day. They believe that it's going to be about a month away for both of them to be ready for the offseason. Strider obviously got hurt at the beginning of the season. Acuna Jr. got hurt towards the middle. They were both without them in 2025. The Braves still happened to make the playoffs. They just got in there at the very end of the season, but obviously missing out on Acuna Jr. and Strider changed that entire landscape of that team. They were the preseason. They were expected to be a preseason 100 win team last year. They happened to just squeak into the postseason. What does this mean for the Braves with not having Strider and Acuna Jr. ready for opening day? Is this concerning for this squad? We're talking about a Braves team in the toughest division in baseball, missing out on their two biggest stars potentially for the first month or even more in 2025.
It's definitely going to hurt them on the pitching side, just because, especially if they don't re-sign Max Fried in free agency, because now their rotation will be Spencer Schwellenbach, potentially Grant Holmes, and the boys, and without Spencer Strider. So their rotation is definitely going to take a hit. It's going to be a lot. There's not going to be as much depth in it. As far as offense goes, they do have guys that are capable of picking up the slack with Acuna out of the picture in Matt Olson and Austin Riley. Ozzy Albies has shown flashes at times. And Michael Harris, he's been really good for them throughout his career, more so at some times than others. So it's with Acuna, while it is a blow to the offense, they do have other guys that can pick up the slack if they show improvement from what they did last season, which was not as good as the year before.
I agree with you. What's, you know, for sure, this is going to be, it's going to be an interesting season right off the bat. We're already talking about missing out on a couple stars this to start off opening day, and then we have a wild offseason coming up. Do you think the Braves are going to change the way that they attack free agency, knowing that these two injuries are occurring?
As far as offensively, I don't think they'll attack it any differently than they already set out to plan. But for as far as pitching goes, I think they will probably try and go a little harder after Max Fried than they originally intended to, just because I've been thinking that they should re-sign Max Fried. I think they should have given him an extension before he entered free agency, just because when you think of the Braves more so than their offense, you think of pitching, just because of the historic pitchers that they've had throughout their tenure as an organization. And even lately, when you think of the Braves, Max Fried is one of the first guys you think of after Ronald Acuna, of course. And but that they should have re-signed him, and they probably learned with the Freddie Freeman stuff a few years ago that to re-sign their stars. And I think that with the news about Spencer Strider, that they will go harder after Max Fried than they originally intended to.
It's going to be a wild offseason. I'm so excited for it. We're just like a couple days in, and the storylines are already flowing in.
Yeah.
Speaking of a storyline, we got a change a former manager of the year for the Miami Marlins, Skip Schumacher. Obviously, he opted out of his contract. He's no longer with the Marlins. He has signed to go ahead and go with the Texas Rangers, but not as a manager, Troy. He's going to be the senior advisor to the president of baseball operations, Chris Young. This was according to Evan Grant of the Dallas Morning News. He will take a front office role, an advisory role, if you will, for the 2023 World Champions. I like this deal. And the reason that I like it is, one, he's a great manager. There's no doubt about that. And I think we will see him return to the dugout at some point in his career. But look at who the manager of the Texas Rangers is right now. It's the great Bruce Bochy. And he's not getting any younger. And he's going into a contract year himself. They didn't have the greatest season this past year, but obviously you can't go ahead and you could, but you're not going to fire a guy like Bochy after winning the World Series just a year removed. I think that this might be the last season for Bochy before he decides to retire. And then you have your replacement waiting in the wings to go, something that you had Will Venables be that guy, but he goes ahead and takes the management job for the Chicago White Sox. You bring in a new heir apparent for the Texas Rangers, and it's a guy with manager of the year prestige in Schumacher. I really like this deal. The Rangers are going to be in for an interesting offseason themselves, cutting payroll, moving on from some players to help them get that World Series. Why not have a guy like Skip Schumacher be able to oversee and help make that roster, so when it is his time to take over the management roles, he is doing exactly what he needs to do. He knows this roster because he helped create it. So I really like this. What about you?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I completely agree with your assessment of the deal. I think that it is Skip Schumacher is now the heir apparent for the Bruce Bochy managerial position. And, you know, there's another way to look at this also. You think the Rangers could be expecting the odd year magic from Bruce Bochy that he gave the Giants in even years in the early 2010s. But no, I don't think the Texas Rangers are going to win the World Series next year, but anything could happen in baseball. But I do think that Skip Schumacher, as you said, is the heir apparent to Bruce Bochy, and that he has been put in that place to help construct the roster more so in his liking. He's a very analytical minded manager. And so he's going to go after guys that fit in with the analytical minded play style that he likes, and having a roster constructed to his liking whenever he does potentially step into that role is just going to be even better for him and the organization.
Would the prophecy be fulfilled if Bruce Bochy could win back-to-back World Series on odd years, since he did it in even years in San Francisco just a decade ago?
Oh, if he did it again, but this time in odd years, then somebody's got to take a look at something, because there is something going on in the water at Bruce Bochy's house.
I love it. All right, let's dig in the quick pitch. We got a couple minutes left here. Three topics that I want to get to. Let's talk about first the Baltimore Orioles. We haven't talked about the Orioles yet today. Going into those GM meetings in San Antonio, a lot of news came out already with some of the GMs. And first, one of them that was Mike Elias. He spoke to some media just yesterday, and he was discussing how Baltimore is going to be looking aggressively. I think the actual quote was, they're going to cast a wide net for starting pitching. Now, this obviously comes with Corbin Burns electing free agency after them going ahead and making that trade the last offseason with the Milwaukee Brewers. He was their staff ace this past season. They haven't ruled out a reunion for Corbin Burns. That is still a possibility. However, there are plenty of good pitchers in the mix for the Baltimore Orioles. The new ownership could be a huge change for the Orioles and how they address free agency. Dave Rubenstein taking over the helm for the Orioles. He did go on a podcast just about a month ago, Troy. It was, I believe, an NPR podcast. And he said, hey, I'm not getting any younger. I think he's 75 years old. And he said he wants to bring a World Series to Baltimore. And he said that he wants to, quote, speed up the efforts getting the Orioles to a World Series. I think that sounds like they want to spend money. That's something they never got to do with the Angelos era, really. That never really happened for the Orioles organization. That's got to be a really nice, refreshing feeling for Orioles fans. The Mets kind of saw that the last season before. I don't think they're going to take a Mets aggressive approach where they hurt themselves for years moving forward. I think Mike Elias is a little bit smarter of a general manager to let that happen. But with that being said, Corbin Burns could still be on the table. You have guys like left-handers Max Fried, which we talked about earlier, Blake Snell, who opted out of his contract with the San Francisco Giants, or you could bring back a guy like Jack Flaherty, who was with the Orioles last season at the trade deadline, to be your staff ace. I think all four of those guys would be a good guy to have as your staff ace, your number one starting pitcher of the rotation. What do you think? And are there any other names that come up to your mind?
Yeah, with what they said, they're probably going to go hard after Corbin Burns to make sure he comes back. But if they do go after Corbin Burns, it's going to take a bigger contract than they have ever given out, with the current leader in the clubhouse being the deal that they gave to Chris Davis in ahead of the 2014 season. And we all know how that turned out, but I don't expect the Corbin Burns deal to turn out like that one. But it's kind of kept the Orioles from really wanting to give out any more big contracts since that. But with the new ownership, that could change. I think that either of Blake Snell or Max Fried will probably be one of their fallback options if Corbin Burns does go elsewhere, because they will come at a much cheaper price and they're really not that far off in production from Corbin Burns. So any of those options would be a good choice for the Orioles, but they definitely need pitching.
If you had to go on a limb right now, Burns, Fried, Flaherty, Snell, which one lands with the Baltimore Orioles, if any?
Max Fried.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Okay. All right. Let's get over to the San Francisco Giants. We talked about them a little bit earlier in this show, but Buster Posey, obviously the new president of baseball operations, former Giants, great future Hall of Famer catcher. He is taking over the front office for the San Francisco Giants. He did bring in a general manager as well, but he was spoken at the GM meetings as well, saying that they're going to aggressively chase a shortstop, Troy. And I found this a little bit interesting because you got a guy like Tyler Fitzgerald, who had a great rookie season, but he's also played different positions on the field. When you look at his defensive stats at shortstop, let's just put it frankly, they're terrible. So moving him out of shortstop would be a good idea. He can move to second base, potentially the outfield. Marcio Luciano obviously has been a top prospect for a very long time. His bat has not seemed to be able to find MLB level. So if they can find a way to work out Luciano with his bat, they could also move him to the outfield. That's the ideas for both of those young stars. While they do that, there are two top candidates to come to mind in the shortstop world. That's Willy Adames and Hong Sung Kim. Do you see the Giants being able to land either one of those two, or being a clear favorite for one of those two this offseason?
I think that if they want to do something really crazy, they should go really hard after Willy Adames and make sure that he does not become a Los Angeles Dodger, because that would throw a wrench in things for their division rival, who is the reigning, defending, undisputed World Series champion. But out of those two, they're probably more likely to land Kim. But I would, if I was Buster Posey and the Giants, I would go hard after Adames.
They've missed out on Aaron Judge, Bryce Harper, Carlos Correa. If they miss out on Juan Soto but land a guy like Willy Adames, could you call this offseason a success for year one of Buster Posey and his new regime?
Yeah, I would still call it a success. It's going to be hard. It's going to take a lot of money to land Juan Soto and a lot of other key factors to line up perfectly for Juan Soto to go to any team. So I would still call it a success if they miss out on Juan Soto but still get Adames.
All right, let's put a bookend on this show and end with the Phillies. As we started with the Phillies, you talked about how you think that Juan Soto and the Phillies are a good match this free agency, this offseason, this winter. Well, the Phillies are open to moving Nick Castellanos, Alec Bohm, and Brandon Marsh. What does that mean moving forward for the organization? And is the reason that they're open to moving them so they can find a spot and maybe some extra money for a guy like Juan Soto?
Yeah, it's going to open up at least two spots in the outfield if they do, in fact, move Marsh and Castellanos, and it'll open up a spot in the infield, and it will definitely free up some more money because they're still on the hook for $20 million over the next 2 years for Castellanos. And although he has been good, he really hasn't been worth the $20 million a year that they've been paying him throughout the contract to this point. And for Marsh and Bohm, they're both approaching arbitration, and Bohm's going to get a really nice increase in pay because of the season that he just had. But it's just, they've got to do something because the approaches that the players took at the plate, specifically those three in particular, down the stretch of the season and in the postseason just did not work out, and it played a big role in the early exit in the playoffs.
So you're sticking with Juan Soto with the Phillies. That's your sticking to it?
Juan Soto is going to be in red pinstripes when it's all said and done.
I'm going to go and say, if I had to pick now, I think he's going to return to the Yankees, but I think the Phillies one makes a lot of sense, but it's hard for me to think that the Yankees will let a guy like Juan Soto walk, regardless of their previous statements of saying that payroll is going to be cut. I just can't see it. Just can't see it happening. Let us know your thoughts in the comment description below. There are plenty to talk about this offseason. And if you have questions or if you have some thoughts of a possible segment idea of what you want us to cover, drop it in the comments. We'd be more than happy to cover it. That's for sure. Especially if it's something like, do you think Troy is going to become an Atlanta Braves fan anytime soon? I think that is a quite possibility. Maybe he can show you his t-shirt collection at some point in time. But other than that, folks, we'll be back here with another episode tomorrow of First Pitch. Plenty to talk about this offseason. We're going to be with you every single step of the way. We're going to get into some of these top free agent prospects if we have time to do so, because news just keeps dropping left and right. But we're going to make sure we have you up to date every single day of the week. Until next time, we'll be back here with another episode of First Pitch.